You are listening to the Casterbridge podcast with a K, available on casterbridge.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Welcome. I suppose we have to define you as Casterbrites. This is myself, James McLean. I am joined with me today with Brian Terranova, the definitive article, as I always say. We have no Christian Corley today, and generally, if people listen to us a lot, they will know that when the Corley without a K is away, the boys from the K come out to play okay. We tend to waffle on without jurisdiction. We don't have, we don't stick to topic. It's a more laid back affair that I'm sure Christian absolutely loathes editing up later. Hi, Christian. Brian,
yes.
how are you being this month today?
This month has been fun, but all in all, I'm well.
You're better now. You've had a bit of a rough time of late, haven't you? Which is why you've not been on a couple of the podcasts.
I have, yeah. And the ball keeps rolling, let me tell you. That's all I'll say for now. It keeps rolling, but yeah.
Lovely.
It's been fun. But I'm here. I am bounced back, as they say. And it's all good. I am looking forward to having a nice chat, as we usually do. So
This is what I hate about New Year, is at New Year, you come into New Year and you put such expectations on it. And you say, I hope this New Year is going to be better or as good or as the last one, and then it sort of gets worse when these sort of things happen, especially early on. I mean, Christian's away with a few family issues that he's got to deal with, and you say you've not been well. I've had family people aren't well, and if you didn't have New Year's, you wouldn't even sort of put that platform
right
to fall from. And yeah,
but... and you're right, you're so right there, because it's funny, it's one of those things that I've been saying, as they say, all year. This is a bad year already. It's terrible. Like, from the start, all this stuff for me started on New Year's Eve, going straight into the new year. So yeah, it's been fun. But it is funny, you're right, because if we didn't have that that whole New Year distinction to put on it, it would just be, hey, this has just been a bad couple of months or whatever, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's a shame. Hopefully it turns around. There's still plenty of this year left for everybody to get happy again and get well. So
yep.
Here's hoping that's the way things sway.
Indeed. So let's have a look at what we've got. Now, we did a podcast with Mr. John Giler last week, so we covered some of the news there. But there is a situation that with Audio Boo listeners, there's a certain time length for a podcast, so some of it had to be truncated and knocked out. So I thought we'd cover a couple of the stories, because I think a couple of them are quite interesting at the moment, and get Brian's opinion, because Brian wasn't with us when we interviewed John. So I mean, I think the first and the other reason for this is because Brian's a big Paul McGann fan, so I think it's only fair that he gets to have a little say, and he won't have heard the podcast either, so he won't know what I'm going to ask him, which is even better.
It's all a big surprise to me.
It is. Well, I mean, first off, Paul McGann's, if you on the Casterbridge, if you're looking at the website, there was an article recently of Paul McGann's quick decision for Night of the Doctor, where he revealed how he was forced to make up his mind pretty darn quick when it came to it. It's kind of odd, because I was kind of surprised, because I kind of thought that he wouldn't have any question on it, because he's been saying for a couple of years now how he would come back or would have liked to have come back as the Doctor.
Yeah, excuse me. I did read that, and I thought similar. I don't know. It seemed really weird to even hear him say that he would have to think about it, considering he just kept saying no one's called, or you know, yeah, just call. I'm ready. I'm up for it.
It is a funny thing, because what we were saying on the previous podcast is that I mean, this is all to do with Paul's recent comments at convention, where he came out and said he'd love to return to Doctor Who, which has seemed to some a strange, odd timing with the resonance with his recent Twitter picture, which I'm sure most of you saw, of him in the 50th console room, 50th anniversary console room, as it is, dressed, because I'm guessing he was filming probably right next to it when he did the Night of the Doctor. There is over here, and I'll keep this very brief, but Brian probably does. I don't know if Brian knows this. BBC Three, which is a third of the channels, a third of our British public channels, the third one, which I think was mentioned in The Demons or something like that. I can't remember, all that time ago, is being decommissioned. But it's being moved to an online incarnation. And there is, as I've been told by a source or two, there is a lot of buzz at the moment about what they're going to do to flagship that move to internet. And there is some query because their sort of focus allegedly is going to be on sort of fewer, bigger programs. So they're going to look at sort of programs that are big and people know. And there is a sort of feeling in the BBC apparently that if you're going to try and sort of do a new BBC online channel, it's very hard to sort of get a presence online, you know, because a lot of people still are just sort of watching digital. They're not watching on the internet. Perhaps they need a flagship show to that's already established or has a name attached to actually run it, to flagship it. And the question of a Doctor Who spin-off has been mooted, allegedly. Now, whether it's been mooted in any serious way or not, but for the idea which beforehand was considered a no-go, allegedly, from what I'm told, so far as spin-offs go, might have a little more credibility. And obviously with McGann being a little interested in Doctor Who, there is a wonder whether there could be some sort of dovetailing here. What do you think, Brian?
I think that would be great. I mean, as you know, for a while I've been saying how awesome it would be to have a spin-off series of Doctor Who that stars the Doctor, not just spin-off characters, because with Paul McGann there was that potential. You know, we now have two adventures for him visually. Yeah. The rest, of course, are all audibly. But it would be nice, I thought, to even do a mini series, kind of like Children of the Earth. Yeah. Or something along those lines, just telling a nice story for Paul McGann. This way he just gets a little bit more. So if it were a Paul McGann-related sort of spin-off series, online makes sense, because a lot of the arguments that I had heard before was that the BBC, would they really want two concurrent series of Doctor Who running? Mm-hmm. And I can get that. I definitely can get that, especially if you don't want to upstage your current doctor with a prior doctor, if that is going to happen, because you know it's going to happen to some of the audience for sure.
Definitely.
But if you put it on an online channel, then it's more, in a sense, an added bonus than it is another TV show that can rival your own TV show. It's more like, here's our TV show, now check out this other really cool, fun thing we've given you. So I think that would work great.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be done. It would be done, obviously. I mean, the way BBC Three is being set up is in a similar line as we've obviously got with Amazon and Netflix and the like, that it's it wouldn't be sort of like an iPlayer 5 minutes sort of thing. They would have to be doing, I would imagine they'd be doing proper stories. But again, it would be at a reduced budget. I mean, there are obviously, I think it's worth saying, there are obviously things against this idea. I mean, the first and foremost is, well, it's not first and foremost in a sense, but McGann has said in his interview that he'd be very wary about stepping on Capaldi's toes while he starts out as the Doctor, giving him space. So one could argue that maybe that would be a logic shared by the production team as well, that would mean a McGann spin-off so soon. Would be perhaps not a good idea. The other question, of course, is you know, is Doctor Who something which is obviously needs a little bit of money behind it? Would it really work as something a little more low budget? Because it probably would obviously have BBC Three's budget is even now nothing compared to BBC One's, let alone what it would be as an online medium. But then again, you know, BBC Worldwide funds Doctor Who as well, so maybe that revenue would go into BBC Three Online's a Doctor Who spin-off there if they did it, or alternatively it could be something like Strax, or
exactly
if they did Doctor Who, because we know that Stephen Moffat has often been quite curious and interested in looking at pursuing that. And
I think personally that while a Paul McGann one would be fantastic and it would be something that the fans would be screaming for, more than likely they would want to use this channel as not only an added bonus for the fans, but more so when you look at it, it would be kind of a tie-in to what's currently happening. This way, if there's bits of information they want to give you, but they don't think are fully important, but they want to pass it on, let's pass it on in the spinoff show. This way they still get the information, but we don't have to waste time in the main show. And I think that makes a little bit more sense, which I think personally also can cause more issues. Because you know how I feel with the mini episodes that they've done. There's been two of those mini episodes so far that really should have been attached to the main story, because it did confuse some of the audience out there. And we're talking not hardcore fans who definitely are going to watch them and get it. We're talking about the casual viewers who aren't aware of them and therefore get very confused at the breaks in between that these mini things had filled. So I think there's an issue if they go down that route, but I think there is actually a tremendous possibility for what it could be.
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. And as we've said, it is just speculation at the moment. There is no evidence it's going down this route at all. It is utter speculation based on little bits and bobs as they trying to work out BBC Three, and it may go in a totally different direction. So it is just idle speculation, but it is interesting stuff. The only other thing I would add that is in pro the favour of something like this is, of course, that the McGann Night of the Doctor was a big success for iPlayer. So there is a certain success for Doctor Who on an online medium in the eyes of commissioning people at the BBC. You know, it's not like it's something which is not tried and tested. So who knows?
That's true. And with that big success, they may actually, even though he doesn't want to step on Capaldi's toes, they may actually sweet talk him into it, because, you know, that may be the direction they want to travel with.
Well, absolutely. And we also got a base in mind that, you know, Capaldi will get a bit of an airing because they're not going to have this running up by the end of the autumn, sort of end of summer season, as when Doctor Who will air. Okay. The Smugglers has been highlighted as another one that might or may not be sort of in the offerings as being. And this goes back to what we were saying a couple of months ago, that we reckon that there's obviously quite a few missing episodes, quite a lot of missing episodes, which might be floating in the future. The Smugglers, how do you feel about The Smugglers?
As I've always said before, basically, any found episode is good to me. You know, I would just want to have as many back as we possibly can, if not all of them. I have listened to The Smugglers on audio, and it's a fine story. You know, if it were one of those situations, which would you rather have? You know, I'm sure there's a couple others I could name on the list. But at the same time, you know, beggars can't be choosers. I would gladly take whatever they can give me, just because, you know, you get to a certain point when you rewatch some of these stories. And certainly for somebody like Patrick Troughton, a little bit more than William Hartnell in this case, though, where his era is severely cut down. Mm-hmm. Anything, even the ones that aren't so hot, are better than nothing, because it just gives you a little bit more visually to see of that era. So especially now for characters like Ben and Polly, you know, they hardly exist. Mm-hmm. So for The Smugglers, for that reason alone, I would love to have that, you know. So I'm quite excited by it. And it goes back to, like you said, the rumors where they were touting around a lot of episodes, especially the one that had like the mother load of all found episodes. It's very hard to say what's real and what's not, especially when there's a rumor like that stating that pretty much almost everything has been found. But it is interesting how many episodes keep doing these random little pop-up ones that were on that list. It really starts to lend a lot more credence to it and give us a bit more hope.
And it doesn't sound like it's not an episode that you would naturally spring up as one that people would think of when they think of missing episodes, because people just generally don't remember The Smugglers because it was at the back end of a season, you know, penultimate one before the end, historical. So it's not really got that sort of memory to it that people would sort of come and think, oh, you know, what missing episode should we do a rumor on? Smugglers isn't one that you do. You do Dalek Master Plan or Marco Polo or, you know, Evil of the Daleks. So it is an interesting one in that sort of sense, that it's a curious one to be relayed. There's another story which I rather like at the moment. That's just it's not a story. It goes back actually to the Doctor with Capaldi, you know, and the more recent events. Is the the Five-ish Doctors crew, as I suppose you could label them now, giving their little bit of advice to Capaldi. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that.
You've not seen that one. It's a very short clip. It's basically the three of them who now I'm afraid, guys, you come across as, you are now just a caricature of your real selves. I can barely take you seriously, which is kind of good because they're great when you don't take them seriously. They're a wonderfully odd matched trio. I just really like this three pair. And what I find so amusing about them now is I don't think of them, when I see them together, I don't think of them as the Doctors. I don't think of them as, you know, 5, 6, and 7. I see them as these oddball Davison, Baker, and McCoy. And that's purely because of the five-ish Doctors and how they sent themselves up and lampooned themselves so very well in that story.
Nice.
So another Scott.
That's right.
Another Scott. Have you been watching The Musketeers at all?
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
Not yet. I got to wait a little bit till it's here or some other way to catch up with it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I know it is got partial funding with America, so I know it's definitely shooting over there soon. I know that it's whether it was going to get its second season was probably going to be more based actually on how well it did here before it even aired over there, which is kind of odd, but that was how the idea was going. But it has got its second season without Capaldi, sadly, because he can't manage to juggle the two, which isn't surprising. But I do think Capaldi is going to be in for a shock with Doctor Who, in a sense. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine about this, about Smith. You know, everyone says how Smith looks like he's aged. And I know people will say, well, you know, 4 years, when you're in your 20s, you do age a bit. But he does look very aged. And if you consider the amount that this show has sucked from him.
Yeah.
I mean, not just, you know, you think you're doing a standard TV series, but all the appearances on top and the video games that he's been done. You can bet these are all contracted and things that he's not easily able to get out of.
Yeah, I mean, and also when I was able to sit on that round table interview in New York at the premiere of the Asylum of the Daleks, he had actually said in that interview that working on the show has physically aged him. You know, he was very aware of it. It's not just fans mentioning it. It's not just the press mentioning it. It's him. He's noticed it. And in fairness, even David Tennant aged over his time on the show. You know, it's a very, as they say, demanding schedule. You know, the only person I can ever think of that really has a bit more of a more demanding schedule than the actors who play the Doctor on the show. And maybe this is a bit unfair to other actors, but it would be John Sim on Life on Mars. You know, because he was in every scene, every waking moment. That man had to be on set, you know, and he was lucky he only did the 2 years of it. You know, with these guys, they stayed for multiple years and they lived it. It was their life. And so, yeah, it definitely did physically age them. It is very curious, I am very curious to see what it will do to Capaldi, but he is a very seasoned actor. He may be a bit more used to things than we think, although he may never have worked on a schedule like this either. But then there's also the rumors, you know, is he sticking around for one? Maybe he realized this is taxing. Look what it did to David. Look what it did to Matt. I'll do one. I'm out of here, you know, or maybe that's just BS and he's going to hang around a little longer and we'll get to find out, which I hope. He does really seem like he's going to be a good one.
As I've said in previous podcasts, I mean, there is a mistake that a lot of people make over that Britain doesn't run like America. And there's apparently only two shows, and I think they're both on Sky, which have ever contracted actors for any more than one season. They all get one seasons with options of extensions. So it feels to me almost like this has been a bit of a media play of trying to make an interesting story. And so he's only signed up for one series. He's going to do like Christopher Eccleston, where they all sign up just for one with the option of extensions. And Eccleston obviously decided he didn't want to do an extra, so he went. But not just BBC, but just generally in England, or sorry, Britain, we do not do the 5-season deals that you get in the States. And I think there's some confusion over that, or maybe an intentional distortion of that so they can make a story. But so I don't think Capaldi's in any danger in that sort of sense. I do wonder, I'll be interested to see if they're able to suck out of him what they sucked out of Smith, given that Smith was a younger actor with a less prolific background. I imagine his contract perhaps wouldn't be quite as balanced as, say, an agent for an actor like Peter Capaldi. So I wonder if Capaldi's will be quite as heavy on the drain as Smith's was, if you see what I mean.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, and there's also the other side of it that, you know, Eccleston pretty much played a this is probably a bad word for it, but probably, but played a pretty subdued version of the Doctor in respect that with all the techno babble and kind of manic kind of stuff, you know, he was a bit more laid back with it. Whereas David Tennant, you know, they gave him massive lines of dialogue of just nonsense because they knew he could handle it.
Yeah.
But every week he had like new things to learn with no time at all. And that's generally what happens with actors. But, you know, those lines, those types of lines are ridiculous. And then Matt Smith, you know, they basically had him just doing anything manic that he could be doing, you know, so they might go back to a more Eccleston approach with Capaldi. And I know that they say they've already given some kind of hints with Mark Gatiss talking about his type of the Doctor. But you never know. I mean, he definitely could be a bit more easygoing, a bit more laid back and pace himself in the role to make things a little bit easier in general. And it might not even be like a to try and make him have an easier time. It might just be the way that they feel his Doctor is.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. It's getting closer and closer, isn't it? Talking Life on Mars, you happy about Keeley Hawes?
You know, I am happy about her being in the show, but I have to say, going by the pictures, my girlfriend and I saw the picture at the same time, and I did one of those, oh my God, she's going to be in Doctor Who. And she looked at it and she's like, oh, I thought that was that woman from the Adipose episode.
Yes, there is, isn't there? There is a lot of that about her.
And I was like, no, that's Keeley Hawes from Ashes to Ashes. And she just, then she lit up because she liked Ashes and she liked Keeley Hawes. I'm looking forward to it, but it is kind of like, it's weird. They're not like 100% similar, but it is weird how similar they actually are.
Yes, no, I can see that. I did think, I didn't really think of that at the time, but now I do. Yeah, that's odd. That's odd indeed. So yes, I don't know. Maybe we should stick on Capaldi. I mean, do you think people are sick of talking about Capaldi? I don't know. It's been quite quiet, hasn't it, in the shooting front? There was that big surge of images early on in January, but since then, it's been as far as I've seen, it's been very, very quiet. We've not seen much.
I've seen one other set of photos that, and I don't, I know you don't care, so I'll tell you. But basically, they kind of depict either he's gone back to 80s, the punk era 80s, or there's some kind of alternate reality kind of thing going on. But the one thing that struck me, I kind of found it a little funny. There's a character, he's got some kind of cybernetic bits on his head standing next to Capaldi. And when they do a leg shot of the two of them, they pretty much look like they're wearing the same pants and shoes, which first made me go like, whoa, what's going on here? Is this going to be the new tweed and bow tie and boots surge in H&M and all over the stores in the US and the UK, you know? But then I saw the other photos and like, man, it's like they didn't just pick, I guess it's rough because it's the 80s and there's really no good fashion in the 80s, but they didn't just go for like fashion in the 80s. They went for the worst fashion in the 80s they could ever think of. So I'm curious because I don't know why somebody put in my head that there's a possibility it could be an alternate reality story. And I always love those stories. I just think they're great to play with. So I'm kind of psyched for that. But if it is just the 80s, it got me thinking, we don't often go to the very recent past in these shows. Mm. We did with Rose for her father, but there was a specific need. But we don't often really go that far or that soon, I guess. And we've been talking for a long time that getting a companion from even the 60s or the 70s now, rather than the era when you would have done them as contemporary companions, something like that would be really fun for me. You know, I'd like to see an era that we've actually lived in be revisited, you know?
Yeah.
So it would, I think it's going to be pretty neat, but you're right. It's been quiet otherwise, aside from those two things I've seen. Maybe it's a lot of studio bound shooting, or maybe they're just good at hiding their locations.
This is surprising, isn't it? They haven't done it more, given that you say take, if we go back to Ashes to Ashes and Life on Mars, part of the success of that, especially I think in the UK, was that people were fascinated about seeing a visualization and an audio as well, because there was a lot of pop music in those, of those eras. And that was...
Yeah.
What focused people? Yeah, Doctor Who hasn't, as you say, apart, hasn't really touched the 70s and 80s. And I, to be honest, I don't know about the States, but I can't imagine the 90s particularly in how you depict it. Because it doesn't feel like things have changed massively aside from cell phones and technology in that sense.
Yeah, it would probably more so be, like you said, cell phones and technology kind of aspect. There would also be, depending on how you do it, if you're doing the early 90s, you know, you'd still want to have those 80s shoulder pads on women,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. And then clothes would be a little bit more ill-fitting as you go through is one thing I noticed. As we moved into the 2000s, people realized, you know, we kind of look like an idiot wearing baggy clothes. So clothes got a little bit more trim looking. But yeah, there are certain fashions, certainly here, that I can think of. If you're going to show somebody in a suit, it's got to be the ugliest tie imaginable. and pretty much just, yeah, ill-fitting suits, you know. But you're right, there really isn't a tremendous leap from where we're at right now. It's all kind of in fit as far as I can tell. But even still, I think there's a way to do it. Like, there was an episode of The X-Files, and it's not particularly the 90s, because obviously that show took place in the 90s.
But I think you see their, what you mean. Yeah.
Okay, you see their 90s technology, mm-hmm. their cell phones that they're using ordinarily. And then they go back to a moment in 1989 when Mulder meets the lone gunman. And one of the things that they did there was, you know, they show Mulder pull his cell phone out, and it's one of those big brick cell phones that they did use in Father's Day.
Yeah.
And it was a nice way. I mean, even there, you got to see the difference. But when you go back and you watch The X-Files in general, you kind of get a nice hint, like, wow, you can kind of portray the 90s with certain cars. A computer, certainly, with DOS running on somebody's computer.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and cell phones, you know, and maybe poofy hair a little bit still.
But it is kind of funny that, but if, I don't know whether this is, you know, we're going a bit off topic here, but it does feel to me that the visual statements of the 90s and the 2000s, and, you know, now we're almost halfway through the 2010s.
Yeah,
hasn't changed as greatly in my head as you would say between, say, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Technology has, but actually...
Well, no, because the 90s started the trend of bringing back fashion, the retro fashion.
I suppose that's true.
So that's kind of why we really haven't had too massive a difference, because, you know, you're getting I forget what it was in the 90s. I think they brought back the 60s or the 70s fashion, and then
it was a bit of psychedelia 90s early on, certainly.
Yeah,
60s and the 90s early on.
Yeah certainly in England. That's right. Well, all the tie-dye stuff and the hippie things and so on. Yeah, and then we moved into the 70s. Now we're still, unfortunately, making our way through the 80s. But what are they going to do when they run out of the 80s? Because there's nothing, like you said, for the 90s. You know, like, once they get there, are they going to go back to the 18th century? What can we do? Create some new fashion or something. But that's probably why you make a very good point, because the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s all had very distinctive looks from each other.
Yeah.
When you visit those eras, you can definitely pinpoint them just as well as you can pinpoint the 17th or the 18th century. That's a good point.
Here's another question. Have you, because this reminds me, someone said in one of our podcast comments, they sort of said, are we going to do anything about sonic screwdrivers? And we have done that before. But have we seen anything to do with the sonic screwdriver for Capaldi? I presume they're going to swap it, since they seem to like doing that.
I assume that they're going to swap it. I've also been wondering and debating if they're going to get rid of it. I don't know why I kind of feel that way, but there's been a little bit of a move. And here's my concern. We talked about it before, but when you get to Davis and Zara, and they decided, you know what, the sonic's being used for too much, rather than write down its usage, they decided to write it out. Now, you look back, and what was it, the second episode that they did, or the third it was, Kinda is what I'm thinking of anyway, Kinda. Not the destruction.
Oh.
Kinda, they needed to write Nyssa out.
Oh, I see.
Because they didn't really have her in. So what they did was they had the doctor lash up a machine where he put the sonic on the machine to help her sleep. And it was like, okay, great, you've written it out of the story. You solved your problem. When you want to have it in a story again, bring it back. I think that's the best direction.
Yes, definitely.
So I don't want to see it written out again. Even with Tom Baker, there was an episode, I forget which one it was now, it might have been The Brain of Morbius, where she suggests that they use a sonic screwdriver to get them out of a jam, and he says he left it in the TARDIS.
Well, yeah,
you know,
that's
it's like, just do that. You know, just do those things. But for some reason, I had this odd feeling they're just going to try to get rid of it. But I definitely think they're going to make a new one, mainly because Smith kind of broke the heck out of the four that they use, mainly on the show.
Did he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're fragile. What the issue with them is that the green areas, the green tube that goes down the central shaft.
Yeah.
It's very fragile. It's great. It looks nice and it works for like a couple flicks. But the more you flick this thing around like madness, like Smith does, they're going to crack and they're going to break. So yeah, he broke a lot of them. They were constantly repairing them. But I also think that, you know, the way that he's given us already two console rooms, mm-hmm. you know, in the short span of Matt Smith's era, I think that he's going to want Capaldi to have his own thing in some way.
Yes, I
think especially so. Since he likes that. And probably, you know, that other one is just going to be so massively associated with Matt Smith, it just makes sense to do a new one.
I think there's also a question. There's several factors. I mean, the other factor, as you say, if there is a certain fragility to the previous prop, generally speaking, if you get the opportunity, you try and streamline a prop, yeah. something, you know, that's not going to be quite as fragile. So I'd imagine if we do get another one, it won't be quite as intricate. It'll perhaps be a little more hard wearing. I think also there's the other factor of merchandise. Remove the sonic screwdriver,
oh, yeah.
you remove a nice bit of tasty merchandise which sells across the board. So I don't think they will lose the sonic for that reason.
That, yeah, that's a very good point. And that gives me a lot more hope, because as you know, I do love them and I like collecting them. I will say that the 11th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver is one that so far the metal replica market has not really been able to produce properly. So I've been waiting for someone to still replicate that properly. Otherwise, you know, the toy, which thankfully was used in an episode, gets to be screen accurate, so it can look cool in the collection. But I think you're right about, you know, trying to take the frailties out of the next one and maybe dulling it down a little bit to make it a bit more sturdier. That does give me a little bit of hope that they're going to make something a bit more, a bit less hard to replicate. Well, you know, from a collector standpoint.
With all props, you live and learn, and you can see when shows do live and learn and try and adapt and improve. But I have to say, I did like how Smith used that sonic screwdriver. It reminded me a little of Paul Darrow, Avon in Blake 7, was always quite renowned for breaking props. But then you see how he used props. And this actually can go back further. You probably actually go back to the 60s with this. And I remember it was something that Nimoy and Shatner were very pushy on with Star Trek, was that that props in sci-fi shouldn't be handled with any sort of care. They should be handled like you'd handle anything that was a military issue or a utensil or, you know, something that was a utility. And so you'd have to give it a certain rough approach to it. And Avon did that in Blake 7, and he was the only one who did. He made you feel that he was looking at something which was just an issued item, not something that had to be carefully held. And I'd have never considered watching Smith with that sonic screwdriver that it was fragile by the way that he used it. The way he handled it, the way he flicked it, the way he spun it. That sort of little motif can really help. Because I remember it was a podcast recently I was listening to. I think it might have been, it was a Doctor Who one, I think. And yes, it was one with Tom Baker, I believe. And they were talking about a character, I can't remember who it was. I think it was actually Baker, who was actually peeling something. Or he was playing with an apple or something. And they were saying, you know, watching you act in the apple. And they're saying one technique that actors do use to practice is unpeeling an orange while delivering some lines. And it's interesting when you watch actors who are having to do two things at once how well they do it, because you are naturally split. You're having to focus on what you're doing with your hands, and at the same time you're having to deliver pre-constructed dialogue. So it's interesting. I think it's worth people watching that. When you watch show, watch Smith when he's playing around with things, because he does toy around with a lot of things. And then watch actors and see how well they do in that sort of approach. How well they able to look like they're fiddling naturally while at the same time talking naturally, while both things are actually constructs.
Yeah.
So
Tennant did a lot of that too, because apparently he was always breaking the props as well, which is why they moved on from the Aztec and gave him a new one. The Aztec was the company that made the one for Christopher Eccleston, and then. When they got to series 3 in the very first episode, they kind of quote destroyed that one so that Tennant could get a new one, because they just wanted to explain the visual change in the prop essentially. Although they used the Aztec a couple more times after that, oddly enough. But anyway, the props, the issue is the props have metal parts, they have moving parts, and they have resin plastic parts. So yeah, I mean, you do any kind of hard work with them, something's going to happen to them. So certainly Smith, definitely, with the fact that his has to be flicked open, and his has a lot more heft to it. So when you are flipping it around, if you happen to drop it instead of catch it, things are going to happen. Whereas Tennant, you drop his, it's definitely going to break too. But Smith has a lot more weight to it. It also brings me back to, since you mentioned Tom Baker, going back to City of Death, when Duggan starts banging the sonic screwdriver against the door to try and make it start working. And I just remember watching that for years, knowing how much I love that prop, because he actually bends the tip and you can see Tom Baker trying to bend it back when he's done. You know, and I'm just like, you're right. Like, these people do have to act like these are real things, like how you would really react with them. You know, I know I've had a few cell phones that when they would go on the fritz, you know, I would like toss them on the table or toss them on the ground or you know, wherever. Not like anything massive, not like I was trying to break them, but just like toss them a little bit more forcefully than the delicate way you usually treat them, just because they're not responding. And like, you get that idiotic response, you know? So yeah, you definitely have to use these things as realistically as possible. So I don't blame them, you know, I don't blame them for what they did. But every time I see a prop like Duggan smashing that prop, I always just think, why would you do that? Why? I understand.
It was a good prop in the sense that because it was metal, I mean, there's that little moment in Ark in Space when he's trying to repair the air system, and he drops it, and he does just drop the prop, and there's no sort of fake prop there. It looks to me, anyway, from what I saw, it looked to me as if he just drops the prop, and you couldn't do that with a sort of a plastic prop or anything else. And it was a good prop in that sense because it did feel very, again, very utility. It felt like a tool. Maybe they need to look at that when they go to the next one. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if they did something more like the old fashioned Sonic from the sort of Tom Baker era, because that's very popular. They've obviously used a couple of variations with it with McGann and the Hurt Doctor as well. So it carries a certain sort of strength in the new series. And again, it's metal, easy to repair, and you know, technically could be hard to break, and it's got a sort of retro feel to it, so maybe they would go with some, I don't know.
There are the people that want Capaldi to have the River Song Sonic. That was the one that was given to her by the Doctor. And you know, they kind of dealt with in the Blu-rays on the extra scenes, they already kind of dealt with the fact that the Doctor already had his last moment with her, you know. You know, but it's a Blu-ray scene, so they can do whatever they want. But in a sense, if they gave that one to Capaldi, it's Tennant and Eccleston like, but it doesn't have the extending parts, so therefore it's less breakable already. You can take away the wear from it this way; it doesn't look as aged. You can make it be, I just built this, and you can imagine that even if it's not Capaldi, you can imagine any old Doctor giving it to her at some point. But I don't know if I necessarily really want that, because I think I am looking forward to a new take on it. But and like what you're talking with the classic design, I think I would really like to see, not really get us the TV movie McGann, the Night of the Doctor TV movie McGann Sonic, or the War Doctor Sonic, but something along those lines where instead of a flick button, or rather a click button, a pull down collar activation, something old hat like that. I think that would be fun. I mean, even if it doesn't have a light this time around, I think that would be fun.
I mean, I got the impression, the whole point as well of the River Song story, and one of the reasons he did the 200 years of the Doctor after he drops off Amy and Rory, was so you could have the whole romance of River Song and or whatever it was with River Song done in that period. So, I mean, okay, I know the end of River Song wouldn't be in that period because you know, you don't need to extend the story anymore, because while I think it was a bad approach, you know, you do story like this, as we've said before in previous podcasts, you need to really do it properly and actually get those moments in. You've got to allow the audience to feel and to take in that drama. And it was none of it. It was just lost. But that would have been a period where his romance with it would have started, and or whatever would have gone on, where she'd have learnt the TARDIS. Would have all been in that period between a series... six and series five and no, it wouldn't be five and six, six A and six. Oh, I can't remember. It'd be somewhere, but it was in that sort of period, the 200 years. It would be there, wouldn't it? And so you don't really need to extend River Song now. I mean, to me, the end. I mean, I rewatched the Name of the Doctor a couple of weeks ago, and to me, it surprised me, because when I rewatched it, it wasn't as romantic as I thought. I mean, he kisses her, but I, you know, when I watched at the time, I thought, oh, this is Moffat very clearly stating that there was a definite romance. But when I rewatched it, it perhaps had a little more ambiguity than I realized. I don't know if that was just me, but
yeah. Well, you know how I felt. I never really bought that whole story, and even certainly in Name of the Doctor, I just felt that was very ill-placed, just because it never really worked with the story. And it's not like I'm one of those Rose Doctor shippers or what they call them. You know, it's not that feeling at all. I just never felt it with them. It never felt real. So having it forced there felt forced, unfortunately. But I think I'm holding out hopes that since Matt Smith pretty much pleaded with Stephen Moffat, you know, give Capaldi anyone, just don't give him River, because apparently he has a big connection to the River Song character and the and Alex Kingston. I'm hoping that Moffat has some sense of loyalty there and will not bring her back in simply for him, and kind of go in a fresh new direction with Capaldi as much as we can, considering we're already going to have the Scooby Gang and Clara in place.
I think there is also an argument, and again, this is quite interesting because we're going away from the usual River Song territory, that River Song really was a story for one Doctor, on the basis that if you're going to consider it a romance or a connection or a paradox or a deep affinity or however you want to deal with their relationship, it is a relationship. And in a sense, it's a relationship which seems to be very, very fixed to one Doctor. I mean, okay, I know Tennant's, she caught Tennant in it, but the whole thing seems to be really about Matt Smith's 11th Doctor. So to move it on, in a sense, because that is the sort of pairing, while yes, the Doctor, you could carry it on because it's regenerations and they're aliens, it feels almost like it would be a bit weird if it suddenly tried to carry on with Capaldi. Because from an audience point of view, while he is the Doctor, he's a different person. He's a different actor. And suddenly it might feel almost not adulterous, but it might just feel weird. So in a sense, I think, you know, if he did bring River Song back for Capaldi, it could mar what he was trying to do, whether you think he did it successfully or not, with Matt Smith.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, the argument for the reverse for that could be made that they successfully did it with Eccleston and Tennant. At least keep that story alive.
Rose, yes, characters. True.
Yeah, but I agree. Like, I think the most interesting thing to me with River Song is, like you said, that she is tied up with the Matt Smith Doctor. Like, she claims to know more, and maybe she's done her research and does know more. But you get that moment in Silence in the Library when she says, you know, this is the youngest I've ever seen you.
Yeah.
So you get this sense that she's certainly not seen anybody past Tennant, and this is the first time she's ever met Tennant. Now, she does say that you showed up on my doorstep with a new haircut. And, you know, now, in a sense, if you want to really take a look at what we were given in Time of the Doctor, you could make the argument that at some point after he shaved his head, you know, he showed up on River Song's doorstep to give her that sonic screwdriver, you know, because I always took that new haircut and a new suit to mean a new regeneration. And we could always think maybe Capaldi just showed up one day and said, here you go. I'm a different man. It's over. You know, things are different now. But I like to think that it got wrapped up with Matt Smith in some way. But then, just go on.
You could argue either way. I mean, if you take that line, I mean, obviously for me, the line was there was because they weren't expecting Tennant. There was a kind of hope Tennant would do another year, and that Tennant would be connect with River Song. I got the impression that there was no, that the story was set on the idea that Tennant would meet her again, and it wasn't going to be a new Doctor. And that's why it doesn't quite. Silence the Library has some continuity. I can never remember them quite, but there are certainly some continuity errors based on what she says to what actually happens. But the new haircut could, as you say, be another, could just be a sort of a euphemism for another regeneration, as you say. So you don't even need to have Smith with a different haircut, do you? She says that to Tennant, doesn't she?
That's a fair point.
So it could just be a sort of, you know, you with another haircut is a sort of very flamboyant way of another heart Time Lordish person saying to another Time Lord, you know, hey, you showed up with a new face. But she says a new haircut, and that would be Smith. And yeah, I just don't think you need to prolong that story. The other reason is that it's now 4 or 5 years ago, and you think, like, do we really need to go back to that point? That point has been made. In a sense, you didn't need to see the screwdriver. The point of that screwdriver was solely for that story and to play off the final moment in that story. So it doesn't really matter when she got it or who she got it from. She could have got it from an Eccleston doctor. Who knows? You know, who's been left a note to drop her off.
And let's be honest. It seems like Moffat clears up storylines when people complain enough. So if he doesn't feel that this one needs to be cleared up, or if he honors Matt Smith's request, maybe he'll just leave it alone anyway and we won't have to worry about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm just not interested. I don't, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she's done, especially after Name of the Doctor. We've got everything we need. We're done. You know, like that's it. She couldn't move on.
You couldn't get a bigger farewell than that.
Right.
Given she was already dead.
Yeah.
And she still gets another farewell. And I thought it was a nice farewell for fans, because I have to admit, as everyone knows who listens to this, I really think that she was badly used. But I know there are a lot of people who do love her. And I thought it was a very nice send-off for her. It was a send-off for those people. So,
Yeah, I mean, and look, you know, she had her moments where I actually thought, this is a cool character today. You know, this is a good moment for her. And there were a few of them, and I definitely can admit that. Overall, I don't blame Alex Kingston. I agree with you. I think she was a poorly handled character. So she could have been good. I just think, you know, she was poorly handled. Let's not try and salvage it now. You know, I know people who do love her, obviously. I know plenty of cosplayers who cosplay her. I know plenty of people who believe in the romance. I know plenty of people who just think that she's the best female character in Doctor Who. That's cool. You know what? But I think Sarah Jane is the best female character in Doctor Who, and she had her time. You know, she came back for a little bit, good for her, but they gave her a break before they did it, you know?
Yeah. I think. I mean, we've gone over what we've think on her before.
Yeah.
And I still stand by it. I think I find it a little frustrating in the sense that the era is over, and I kind of feel that even if you really liked her, I still think he let everyone down on it, because he did not really fulfill what was given out there, that you were going to see this counter romance going on, and he didn't really dare go there. Maybe he couldn't, because there's too many people like me, maybe, but yeah. It felt shortchanged in whatever way. But anyway, so a brand new era, hopefully a new doctor and a new companion, and maybe a new sonic screwdriver. Do you have any recommendations for this week?
I don't have any story recommendations, but I do. Excuse me. I do want to say, anybody who is a prop collector like myself, I highly recommend checking out Nick Rabata's website, Rubber Toe Replicas. He's got a lot of great stuff on there. Obviously, he makes props for the show. He's the guy who actually made the Matt Smith sonic screwdriver. They're pricey because they're proper replicas made by the guy who made them for the show. But the one thing I want to talk about is the one that I recently just picked up, which is the vortex manipulator that was used by Clara, that was given by Jack to the Black Archive in Day of the Doctor. And Nick had to remake this prop. It wasn't originally made by him. What happened was the Jack Harkness prop actually went missing, and they asked Nick to replicate this. So because he had to replicate it, there's some variances. One of them is the scale. It's slightly larger. But it's a great replica, and it's a replica, like I said, since it's the Black Archive one, it doesn't have to be 100% Jack's anyway. Mm-hmm. But there is one thing I want to mention. The main reason I bring it up is because you never got to see it on screen, but because they shot around the face of the vortex manipulator, so you never actually got to see his actual replication on screen. And the reason for that is because, as you know, there's about four buttons on Jack's vortex manipulator. There's three oval buttons and then one circular. On the last oval button, rather than make the button actually functional, he put a hole in it and put a button in the center of it, which made it look a little weird. No offense to Nick. It just, you know, as a prop that everybody was used to, having this button suddenly be there seemed a bit of a deviation. So clearly the production team shot around it. The reason I bring it up is because he was making his replicas 100% to the one that was used in the show. And I had contacted him and asked if there was any chance that button could be removed, since it was never seen on screen. And he had told me that the way Jack Harkness's was done, it had a hidden toggle switch in between the layers of the leather wrist strap, and that he would be happy to do that for me. And true to his word, he did just that. So not only is he a great, great at making props for the show and selling them very kindly for us to collect, but he is really awesome at working with you, you know, on things like that, I'm sure, to a degree. And I'm sure, you know, we don't want to critique his stuff crazily. I just asked him to just make it look a little visually more like Jack's. You know, I wasn't trying to put it down by any means, because it's a beautiful, beautiful piece. I love this thing, you know, but I thought that was really fantastic. I asked him, he said yes. It was like a month or two ago, and I get it in my hands, and he honored it. So I thought that was really fantastic. So I would highly recommend Rubber Toe Replicas. because you're getting props made by a guy who made them in the show, and you're getting top quality stuff.
No, I'm just looking through the site. The site wasn't working for me, but I've gone through the cache version and just looking through the stuff. He's got, are those the bracelets from the Voyage of the Damned that I see there?
Oh, get out! I haven't seen that.
I could be wrong. I'm looking through.
You're
the
going
cache.
Through the cache. That's right.
Yeah, so it's a little harder. It looks like. I don't recognize them. You see, they just remind me of it. Unless they're vortex manipulators as well. I can't see where they are. We'll have to talk about this some other time. But yes, there's some great stuff, especially if you're into those. If you're into the into prop gathering, some really nice stuff. It's a good recommendation. I don't think I've really got that much of a recommendation this week, since, as I say, we recorded only last Friday, which was like two, three days ago. So I'm not sure what I can really, really recommend. So that's a bit of a bugger, really, isn't it?
But you always recommend the Casturbaris podcast with a K.
I guess so. I guess so. Yes, it's all right. I guess it gives us something to listen to occasionally and something to do. Yeah, I'd have to say, if I'm still recommending stuff that I'm listening to, I'm still enjoying the 50th anniversary CD special. To say 129 tracks for about a tenner.
I really need to pick that up.
Then. You really do. There's a couple of things which are slightly disappointing me. Do you remember that bit in Seeds of Death? There's that lovely little bit where Troughton's on the run from the Ice Warriors. That music's not there. In fact, the Ice Warrior music's only 30 seconds. And it's like, nah, you know, that's quite quintessential, that bit. And as I say, City of Death not being there was really weird. And yet they've got large amounts of Invasion of Time, which is, well, typical sort of Dudley Simpson stuff. It's not stuff that you would ever sort of say, hey, I really miss the music from Invasion of Time. So there are some very funny missing bits on there. But yeah, it's just such a good buy, isn't it? And if you've not watched The Musketeers, I say go and watch that, because, you know, that's Capaldi at his best as well. I don't know. This is just some really good stuff out there if you're a Doctor Who fan at the moment. Just kick-ass stuff. I'm just trying to think, is there anything else that I would like to recommend to people that I've not watched in a while? Is there anything you'd like to recommend to people that you've not watched which you want to go and watch again? So not a recommendation based on what you've watched, but a recommendation based on what you should have to go and watch.
Wow. Something that I should have to go to watch. You know, it's a tough one, because there are so many good shows. Like, I would always recommend The Saint, the Roger Moore The Saint. I love that TV show. Going back, and that's going back far, not within my era, you see, but I enjoyed that one quite a lot.
Yeah, but I think Doctor Who fans could probably get something out of that, couldn't they?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's silly. I know you saw my post the other day on Facebook with my joke post about my MacGyver prop collection.
MacGyver prop collection. Yeah.
But I have to say, MacGyver is a TV show I grew up on, and I loved that TV show. You know, it's hokey, but it was fun, you know, and I would always recommend that one, you know, especially since, you know, when I first started writing for the K, I wrote an article about how I felt MacGyver was America's Doctor Who, and not in the science fiction realm, but in a hero who didn't use weapons, but more so used his intelligence to defeat the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he even had his own sonic screwdriver in his Swiss Army knife. You know, it was a tool that was, you know, could clearly do some harm, you know, if you used it in that manner. But you never did. You always used it in a way to just outsmart people. So, yeah, I mean, you know, not to go down an entire list of TV shows or movies that I've always loved, but those are shows that I can always turn to and just enjoy. For what they are, and the only thing is, kind of like watching classic Doctor Who, you do have to remember they were made in a different era.
Yes.
So you have to watch them with different standards. You can't watch them with today's movies or TV standards, and just take them for the stories and the fun characters that they have.
It's like Battlestar Galactica, you know, the 70s version is that compared to the recent one, storylines and, you know, the depth is not there. The misogyny is quite explicit, and you know, it's but you take it for its time. And I'll tell you something I'm going to recommend, because I've heard rumors that it is actually now going into development, is Farscape. is, as it looks like a new Farscape. There was a little bit that was mooting out a couple of weeks ago that said it was in development, but from what I was told, it wasn't. It was just, again, them pitching for development. But it sounds like Channel 9 in Australia has picked it up. So there could be another Farscape thing coming our way. So if you've not watched Farscape before, I would say do go and watch that, because it is one of the most zany and exciting and refreshing science fiction shows outside Doctor Who.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
So, yes, I think that will be. And, of course, there is a little link in the fact that Virginia Hayes been doing some Big Finish stuff. And
right.
She was in and, of course, Ben Browder, the star of Farscape, was in series 6A of Doctor Who. So there's our links to Doctor Who. Well, I do
have to say real quick on that note, just that recommendation is my girlfriend had a friend of hers try and get her to watch it, Farscape. Mm-hmm. And as I generally tell the people, you know, you got to, you know, get through a bit of the rough, we're just finding our feet of the first season with any TV show, not just Farscape, any TV show. And the reason I say that is because she tried watching it and she kind of felt this show maybe isn't for me. But then recently I was watching the first two seasons, and I got to the season ender of season two into season three.
Yeah.
And she sat and watched them with me. And like the next day after we watched it, we were just kind of like sitting around figuring out what we should do. And she's like, well, can we put on the beginning of Farscape? And I was like, what? I just turned like in complete shock, because I knew she kept telling me it wasn't for her. So she wasn't really interested in watching them with me. And she said, yeah, when I first started watching it, I didn't think it was for me. But that episode you put on the other day was really good. I want to start it from the beginning now. Mm. So, you know, there's, you know, I don't know if I necessarily recommend watching TV shows out of order, but I definitely want to say there's a certain point in season one where the show just hits the ground and never stops running. It's just one of those shows. And not to say that the early episodes are bad, because I rewatched it again and I found many of them very, very good. Go on.
I was generally surprised, because I thought that they'd actually intentionally done it that way, that they started off with him as a sort of like a, for people who don't know, Farscape's basically about, if you imagine Buck Rogers, a guy, an astronaut who gets sucked through a wormhole into a weird, zany universe. And initially, it feels like it's going to play out like Buck Rogers, where he champions the good of humanity to everyone else, and they learn to sort solutions out using his quirky 20th century charms. But it doesn't go that route, and eventually he just sort of becomes like one of them, some sort of slightly unhinged, gun-touting killer as the series progresses. But I kind of thought that was intentional, and so you start him off as this like nice Buck Rogers type who suddenly realizes he's out of his depth, but you know he's kind of weird and crazy, and people learn to accept him. But he gradually, as I say, he sort of changes. But I get the impression, when watching his commentaries and the like, that it wasn't ever quite planned like that, but they were just feeling their way, and they started to work out where it was working and where it wasn't, and they played it very intuitively. And very rarely do shows which work intuitively carry any sort of consistency or smoothness. You can feel that they're intuitive, you can feel the changes, you can feel that their work, you know, like Battlestar Galactica is a very good example, that they're sort of guessing and throwing things into the pot and seeing what works.
Absolutely, everything felt very natural to me. I completely agree with you on that. It didn't feel like it was an odd, something's not working, let's fix it, shift. It totally felt like this was their plan.
And it's brilliant for a show like that, and as I said, really recommend it. It's I think if you like Doctor Who, yeah, I know some people can't, the fact there's a lot of Muppet puppetry in there, they find that very hard, but if you can get past that, which you should be able to if you enjoy K9, that it's just a whole load of fun. So yeah, anyway, we've gone well off base, probably well over time. We have gone well over time. Well, pretty much, yes, I think we have. So I think 4 minutes will be edited out of this, but there we go. Thank you very much for listening to us waffle and waffle our way through all this. We'll be back next week with, I'm sure, Christian Corley, and hopefully the three of us. It'd be nice to have the three of us back on again. Thank you, Brian. Thank you lot. Toodles.